happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup, rested and ready, back from 2 weeks
ago. Welcome back, Ann.
Thank you to Rob Shooter and Dawn Ennis for filling in. I really appreciate it.
Great. And you're really stepping into the action here, because with LGBTQ students under assault from Republican legislatures across the country, our guest is Melanie Willingham Jaggers, the new executive director of GLSEN, the national group dedicated to keeping LGBTQ youth safe in schools.
Can't wait to talk to her. She's got a huge job to do and really horrifying things to face. Meanwhile, Gallup has done a poll that finds Americans identifying as LGBTQ have doubled over the last decade.
The U.S. Supreme Court says they will hear the challenge of a Colorado web designer who wants the right to refuse service to same-sex couples.
Been there, done that. The U.S. State Department says Russian plans for the Ukraine, once they take over, include executing LGBTQ activists, as well as dissidents, politicians, and journalists.
New York City Mayor Eric Adams has hired yet another anti-LGBTQ activist for a top administration position, and community protest is intensifying.
Yes, it is. In Michigan, all the Republicans running for attorney general want the right to ban birth control again.
Wow. Birth control. We have a sad litany of anti-trans murders to report. But a trans woman in Atlanta, wrongly arrested in 2015 and jailed for 6 months, finally got a measure of justice.
Yeah. This week, we also mourn the loss of two pioneering gay rights attorneys and a huge hero in the field of health, Dr. Paul Farmer, a giant in the treatment of HIV and other diseases worldwide.
Right. And we'll tell you who the six more LGBTQ medal winners from the Winter Olympics are, and we'll show you them. But we welcome Melanie Willingham Jaggers. There she is. There you are. New executive director of GLSEN, which has worked since 1990 to ensure that LGBTQ students are able to learn and grow in a school environment free from bullying and harassment. Who could be against that? You've served as deputy director since 2019. You did work in labor at Cornell. You're the former board co-chair of Audre Lorde Project for People of Color. Welcome. How do you describe the fraught environment that we're in? And excuse me, but help me with your pronouns again.
Sure. I use she and they pronouns interchangeably.
Okay. Welcome.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that introduction. I'm super happy to be here. I said this before we got on the air, but you all are my hometown cable access news channel. So I get to watch you all on MNN here in New York City where I live. The question I think that we are wrestling with, all of us, but specifically us here at GLSEN, is really the question of what do we owe our children, right? We require young people and require their parents to put young people in our education system, starting from when they're 5 years old and all the way through until they graduate. Our highest hope for what young people, all young people can achieve and expect in the system we require them to be in is that they are safe and affirmed. And that as they go through their educational career, they grow into a more full version of themselves, right? That's not about being bullied or battered or having survived despite the conditions. But really, what does it look like when every single learner is celebrated, when every single learner is affirmed, and when every single learner has what they need in order to be fully successful and to fully participate in the education system? Now, when it comes to LGBTQ plus youth, and when it comes to trans youth and gender diverse youth in particular, we focus in on those young people because they are particularly denied the opportunity to fully participate, to be seen, to be affirmed. And so what we're seeing right now across the country is a really cynical approach, right, to how we treat children, to how we treat learners, and how we behave and legislate in schools, right? Schools are a place for education to happen. You know, my mom, who raised me as a single mother, sent me to school in hopes that I came back knowing more than she did, right? Versus her taking a front seat to limit what my teachers taught me. And I think that that's what's getting lost in this whole shuffle. And I think that that's what the authors of these bills that are targeting LGBTQ plus young people, specifically targeting trans and gender diverse young people, are really honing in on, is this idea of parents, parents' rights. And that's just, it's a disingenuous argument, right? This is really about controlling what young people learn and know about. And the only thing that we are fighting for is that everyone receives a full and thorough and age-appropriate education. This is not about, you know, teaching young people things that aren't true. This is not about teaching young people that are things that are age inappropriate. This is really about the process of education that every single young person we know from our research learns most successfully when they are able to see themselves in the curriculum, when they are able to understand that they themselves, their families, their communities have been a part of this American project, this democratic project. That's what every single learner deserves, including LGBTQ plus youth.
So that's a great ideal picture of what it is we want our schools to look like and how we want our kids raised. But in fact, I think the key word you used is cynical. And I would add exploitative to that, exploitative of fear. And of course, this encompasses, as you've talked about in emphasizing intersectionality, not just sexual orientation or gender identity, but race as well, as they attack all the books and the teaching that encompass the true history of this country. And this seems to be about holding action against progress by, I hope, a minority of the country, but a very white supremacist approach. And it's terrifying to me. And I wonder how you understand this situation and how you go about trying to either calm those fears or, you know, either seduce people or drag them into a better understanding of that vision you put out.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, part of the work of advocates like me in the field is to really set a vision, set our North Star, because if it was easy, we would have already done it. What it's going to take is growing and stretching and learning and bringing more people into the fight. Here's what I would say, which is around really thinking about what it's going to take for us to get where we need to go. One of the things that we understand is true and why we have an intersectional approach to our work is because no young person, right, is only LGBTQ plus, right? No adult is only LGBTQ plus. Audre Lorde says, right, we don't fight single issue battles because we don't live single issue lives. The fact is that these young people are not just queer, not just trans, not just non-binary. They are also students of color. They also are, you know, maybe come from immigrant communities, families, or experiences. They might be suburban. They might be cisgender. They might be white, but they are in community with people who are not that. And so it's so important that we understand and support both when it comes to education, that we're supporting the needs of the whole child as a learner inside of schools. And so those needs are sometimes connected to their LGBTQ plus identity, but they are often connected to their other identities as well. In the same way that we know that a young person can't come to school and learn if they're hungry, we know that a young person can't come to school and learn if they are being bullied or harassed or assaulted. Now, maybe that's LGBTQ plus bullying, but also maybe it's their own fear of being targeted by law enforcement that's present in their schools, right? Maybe it's that they are concerned that there might be immigration agents that are coming to their classrooms, right? There are ways in which it's the entire identity of the learner that we have to take into consideration and we have to support and we have to accommodate. The other thing I would just note is that we have a real focus not only on racial justice and gender justice, but also disability justice. We take very seriously, right, the obligation of schools to educate, to provide what every learner needs in order to be successful, particularly students who have disabilities. And so, again, you know, GLSEN is here and leading the fight, has been in this fight for over 30 years now to make sure that schools are safe and affirming. And we're just so happy to be continuing our work with a clear focus with our, you know, with the call to our strategic North Star of disability justice, gender justice, and racial justice as part, as we know that we cannot be successful in our mission to make schools safe and accessible for young people who are LGBTQ plus, unless we take on this other level of focus.
Now, you work with like 38 partners across the country. So you're all over the country. I know New York best. We got a lot of policies changed. But how many schools really changed and became had a climate of respect for everybody and really worked at that? Where are you really seeing the successes out there, either in school systems or in states?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do have 38 partners across the country. And the thing that makes me proudest, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, originally, so I'm from the Midwest. About a third of our chapters exist on the on either coast, here in New York on the East Coast and about half a dozen on the West Coast. And the rest of our chapters are in the Midwest and in the South. And to me, that feels like a deeply powerful and wonderful opportunity, right? We have local advocates on the ground in Tennessee, in Florida, in Texas, in Ohio. We have folks in Kansas, both Kansas City and the state, Kansas City, Missouri, and the state. We have GLSEN chapters everywhere who are fighting on the ground to make sure that the lived everyday experience of young people who are LGBTQ plus is safe and affirming. Now, here's what I'll say about your question around where's the real progress being made. In this country, there are 15,000 school districts. And in each school district, there are several, right, up to, you know, dozens of schools within each of those districts. Now, the question you asked is a good one, right? How are we making sure that if I'm able to change the school that's in my neighborhood to make sure it's safe and affirming, that's one school, right? For a couple hundred, maybe a thousand students. But what about the school just up the street? Part of what we do at GLSEN is work at the grassroots, right? At the front line, in classrooms and communities, et cetera. But we also work at what I call upstream, right? We work to make sure that the policies and laws and regulations and guidances and funding go to schools that are delivering on these best practices, and that schools that are still struggling to make sure that young people have the supports they need, have the guidance, have the support, have the funding to do that. And so, you know, similar to what it was like before gay marriage was legalized all over the country, you might have what we have for young people in this country is a patchwork of supports, right? A patchwork of, in this state, you can't say gay. And in this state, the teachers will have to tell your parents if you come out to them. But in this state, you're safe and affirmed. That is just not the reality that we ought to be burdening our young people with. And if it's not state by state, sometimes it's district by district. And so that really highlights for us the importance of making sure that supportive policies, supportive laws, supportive guidances are comprehensive and across the entire board, because any number less than 15,000 school districts where young people have safe and affirming policies that they can rely on is too few. And so the fight continues.
So can people locally get involved in this fight by checking out GLSEN for a local chapter in their area, or how to start their own chapter maybe if there's not one nearby?
Absolutely. You know, our work in this next year is to fortify, grow, and activate. We are taking very seriously the need for us to be on the ground everywhere. So if you are interested in getting involved, please go to GLSEN.org. Also, if you are an adult, right, if you're maybe you're a parent, maybe you're a teacher, maybe you're a caring adult, you know, young people are under a lot of stress. I know that I'm under a lot of stress 2 years, going on 3 years in this pandemic. What feels like 3 years is probably just 2 years in this pandemic. And I'm a grown up, right, with my own resources and coping mechanisms. Young people are going through this same moment of deep and intense stress and trauma and loss in a way that's very scary. They're going through it with fewer fewer resources than us adults are. So find a young person and listen to them. How are they? Check in on them. And when you ask them how they're doing and when you ask them what you can do to help, listen. The other thing I would just say is that adults, we have to be loud. We have to be out front in defense and support of our young people who are LGBTQ plus, particularly young people who are trans and non-binary. It is a terrifying time to be a person. It's even scarier to be a young person. And on top of that, imagine coming to the understanding of yourself that you are also trans or non-binary. So what we as adults have to do is be loud and out front and visible in our support of young people who are being targeted and marginalized by adults who know better. Adults who are not doing what they ought to be doing, which is supporting and representing and protecting everyone. Instead, they are targeting our most vulnerable young people. So get up, stand up, find a young person, support them, be loud and proud in your support.
Well, we appreciate your positivity, and we know you have to get on to your next assignment, but please check out the website, glisten.org. We thank you, Melanie Willingham Jaggers, and wish you all the best of luck. And tell us what we can do all the time to let our viewers know what they can do.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you. Come back soon.
Will do.
Bye.
Well,
I just have to say, you know, I think these politicians and adults who are running these campaigns are so, they hate children. They're not defending children. They hate children. They really don't care about children. They're only interested in their own advancement. And the real heroes in all this are the kids. And the stories I love best every week doing this show are the stories about kids standing up and supporting each other in these schools.
Well, let's follow up on that. I mean, because there are 170 anti-LGBTQ bills in the legislature, 69 concerning school policies. And the update on the Florida Don't Say Gay bill, it's working its way through the legislature. They did drop an amendment that said, you've got to tell parents if you find out a kid is gay within 6 weeks. They dropped that, but they also defeated an amendment for the Democrats, which said, we want to create a safe school environment for LGBTQ children. They voted no on that. We don't want to create a safe environment for LGBTQ children.
And what we're hearing from GLSEN is that in Florida, LGBTQ students are skipping school and skipping functions because they're so upset and depressed and scared by what's going on.
Well, the other alarming story I read in The Nation is that teachers, and it's not shocking because of the pandemic, but because of this, the culture wars, teachers are quitting in droves.
Yeah.
I mean, they got satisfaction out of helping kids for low pay. Okay. But if you're going to be looking over their shoulders all the time and censoring them and firing them, you know, if they say a word wrong, they're quitting.
And the schools are getting rid of some of the GSAs.
Well, they can't do that legally.
Maybe not, but they're attacking them and they're trying to get rid of them. And there are red state kids who are taking the lessons from the adults and are attacking LGBTQ students.
In Pennsylvania, you know, the GSA survived a vote, but there were two who voted against it. One of them said they shouldn't be going to a GSA. They should be going to church.
And another revelatory newsletter from my new favorite, Popular Information, which reveals a lot about corporations talking out of both sides of their mouths. And their new study has put together a list of supposedly pro-LGBTQ corporations, which are funding the anti-LGBTQ politicians who are putting together these Don't Say Gay laws.
Was ever so.
Comcast NBC, United Health Group, Duke Energy, AT&T, Walgreens, Anheuser-Busch, Publix, supermarkets, all are giving substantial money to politicians in Florida who are writing these anti-LGBTQ bills.
And in Missouri, you like the more positive story, students and the ACLU are suing over the removal of books from school libraries, including those with LGBTQ themes. The Wettsville Board went after anything from a perspective of racial and sexual minorities. The ACLU won a similar case in the year 2000 in Wichita Falls, Texas, when Heather Has Two Mommies and Daddy's Roommate was banned.
I'm also happy to see that the newly elected governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, is losing support very fast because of his attacks on students and schools and his support for banning books.
Well, you know, I went to the University of Virginia. Now that they have Youngkin, a right-winger in there, the push is on to stack the Board of Visitors with people against diversity programs. And it's being led by a guy named Bert Ellis, who was a classmate of mine. When we sponsored Frank Kameny as a speaker with him from the University Union, he read about it and he said, oh, no, we're not doing this. Homosexuality, we don't do that. That's not proper. And this is the guy who's got a whole association to change the University of Virginia into a right-wing institution.
I think you're going to have to go to your next reunion.
Anyway,
wasn't it amusing to find that you and Dawn Ennis, our co-host last week, both went to the same high school?
Chaminade High School, a Catholic school on Long Island. We both went there. We've both been back from time to time.
Yeah, I'm eager to see you go to that reunion.
They're a little wary of us. Now, speaking of books, it's also good to see that Marcus Dole, D-O-H-L-E, is donating $500,000 to free speech organizations to fight book banning, mainly the money going to PEN America, which is a group.
Yeah, but it is not good to see the latest headline from Texas, where Governor Abbott is ordering, having failed to pass a law for this in the legislature, is now ordering his minions in the state government to institute investigations of parents who support their trans kids and charge them with child abuse.
Outrageous. Well,
I mean, well, it's cynical. Come on.
Man, I mean, they're laying it all out. Senator Rick Scott from Florida, right winger, he heads the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. He put out an 11-point plan for saving America that includes eliminating data on what he calls sexual preference. Well, you're not going to get anything out of me about what my preference is, but my orientation is gay. Ban the census from asking about it, ban the census from asking about race or ethnicity.
Yeah, because, you know, there's no racism anymore, right? And we're all the same under the skin. And then there's South Dakota, where, of course, Governor Kristi Noem was asked why 90% of LGBTQ youth report themselves anxious and depressed. And she says, I don't know. We should figure it out. It makes me sad.
She said, that makes me sad.
And meanwhile, a six-year-old trans girl in South Dakota is faking injuries at school to try to conceal the fact that she's been ordered to use the bathroom in the nurse's office. So rather than admit that it's because she's trans, she tells her classmates that, I'm sick and I have to go to the nurse's office. Her classmates think she has cancer.
Now, the sick people, of course, are the school authorities and these politicians. In Utah, they passed an anti-trans sports bill. In Alabama, a bathroom bill to limit trans students' access has advanced. And then there's Michigan. This isn't a school story. An update on the Republican primary for attorney general. Now the attorney general is Dana Nessel, an out lesbian, and she's an activist. Three Republicans said they oppose the 1965 Supreme Court ruling in Griswold v. Connecticut, which outlawed the decision outlawed prosecution of married couples for using contraception. Married couples under an 1879 law. Let's go back there. I mean, this was the basis for Roe v. Wade. This was the basis for getting rid of the sodomy laws and all that.
Here's the bet I would like to propose. Which country will devolve into unspeakable fascism first, the U.S. or Ukraine?
Well, they're at the doorstep in Ukraine.
And they don't need tanks here. they're just winning by lying to the people.
Well, of course, since you brought it up, the U.S. State Department says that Russian authorities have drawn up a list of Ukrainians to execute after invading the country. I mean, they have deep repression in Russia, and they want to impose the same thing on the Ukraine. And on the list are LGBTQ citizens, as well as politicians, journalists, and members of religious and ethnic minority groups. So Joseph Stalin lives. They also plan to use lethal measures to disperse peaceful protests. That's something Governor DeSantis likes to do in Florida, too.
Well, we've got plenty more depressing news for you, but now let's take a moment to look at something more hopeful. The latest Gallup poll taken of 12,000 people last year, and they say that 7.1% of the U.S. population, adult population, I believe, now reports itself as LGBT or Q. This is twice the number as 2012, then only 3.5% so identified.
The recruitment drive is working. No, it's just that people have more information. And, you know, we have had some success on this movement. And that's what this is a backlash to.
Well, it's also about evolution. The biggest numbers come as you go down to the younger segments of the population. So in Gen Z, ages 18 to 24, 21% identify as LGBTQ.
And, you know, the interesting thing is bisexual is the most common identification. 56% of all the people who identify as LGBTQ identified as bi. 4% of that's 4% of the U.S. population. In terms of gays and lesbians, 2.5% of the population identify that way.
Well, you know, I like to quote you on something you claim never to have said, which is that 10% of the world is exclusively heterosexual, 10% exclusively homosexual, and 80% bisexual.
We're all on the spectrum.
Now,
the Victory Fund is angry that just 0.2% of elected officials are LGBTQ people, even though 7.1% of the adult population is. So
we're getting there. We're making progress. But let's go back to a bad news story at the Supreme Court.
Well,
Colorado again.
All right. Look, they agreed to hear this case of a web designer, Lori Smith. There she is, brought by Alliance Defending Freedom. Now, nobody gay asked her to design a website for their wedding, but she wants to get into designing websites for weddings, and she wants to post that she doesn't do the gays. So, but the interesting thing about the case is that the court limited the case to this question, whether applying a public accommodation law to compel an artist to speak or stay silent violates free speech clause of the First Amendment. Now, so it's basically, you know, first of all, she's saying she's an artist. She's a craftswoman. I mean, I'm not, you know, we could argue about that, but whatever. I mean, everybody who provides a service makes something and can say, I'm creating and I don't want to create for them. You know, so if she wins her case, civil rights laws are out the window. I hope that the court asks her, well, if you have a feeling against interracial marriage, you know, can we let you not do that as well and announce that you're not doing that? Where does this all lead?
Or you just don't like Latino people. Can you turn them away? Or
she is a big Christian, but they did not take the religious aspect of her case. She and the ADF wanted to overturn Employment Division versus Smith, which said, if a law is generally applicable, as the civil rights laws are, then you can't just use religion as your excuse for not following it. So she didn't get that on the agenda.
Yeah, she.
In a way, it's worse because it's like any feeling that you have can now be used not to comply with the law.
Well, it's the same argument that the Colorado wedding cake baker wanted to make about artistic expression. It's not that I'm just providing a service like running a restaurant where I would have to serve everybody. This is a special case where I am an artist and they're asking me to express something that I don't agree with. And in fact, the wedding flowers store wanted to make the same argument about artistry and personal expression of the artist. And the flower shop owner did not get away with that. The wedding cake ended in an ambiguous decision because the case was not decided on that question. So now the ADF is trying to finally get resolution on this question in their favor to say that artists have the right to choose their customers. Okay. And we have always known and acknowledged that, for instance, T-shirt makers have a right to choose their expression and can reject customers' particular messages. So I'm a little concerned about this.
Well, you know, but look, if I worked at Starbucks and somebody with a MAGA hat came in, I wouldn't feel like making a cup of coffee for them, but I would. Because, you know, I don't believe in discrimination. The court, by the way, will not.
Neither does the law. But I doubt you could make an argument about your artistic expression.
Well, have you seen some of those coffees that they make with the designs on? I'm not kidding.
They're not right. If they asked you to make a MAGA design or write MAGA on the cup.
All right.
Have an argument.
I agree with you. But the court will not. The court also said they will not hear the appeal of a trans inmate who was repeatedly raped in prison. The inmate was suing because of the Prison Rape Elimination Act not being enforced, and there was a lower court decision on the subject. And this SCOTUS refuses. There's a division on the decisions, and the Supreme Court is not going to resolve this.
Well, we're waiting with bated breath for our president to announce his nomination to the Supreme Court. We're pretty confident we'll get a good nomination, but we have no confidence it will make any difference in the voting pattern on the court.
In the short run.
Yeah.
We did get a new good, really good immigration policy from Biden. Immigration will now allow LGBTQ refugees and asylum seekers coming to the United States to be considered spouses even when their marriages are not recognized by their own countries or by the country where they were being held in asylum. Previously one partner would qualify and the other would be barred from entering the country. The administration also ended the policy of requiring that a child had to be biologically related to both married parents to be granted U.S. citizenship, even though the law did not require that.
They did that a while ago, but it's all in the same line of reasoning.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's have another good news story, which is that U.S. women's soccer, led by Megan Rapinoe and other out lesbians, has achieved an equal pay agreement with U.S. soccer. The women's soccer team had been negotiating for years and suing, and suddenly U.S. soccer came through with this agreement. $25 million, most of it in back pay, also some equal pay going forward and equal conditions. That's the team celebrating winning the World Cup, not this agreement, but it's the same spirit.
Right. And it's been an up and down battle. They didn't win all the way along, but they won in the end. It's great. In Kentucky, they elected the first out LGBTQ state representative, Keturah Herron, in a landslide in the special election. Now, there was an out gay member of the Kentucky General Assembly 15 years ago, Ernesto Scorsone from Lexington, who was appointed a judge in 2008. But, of course, the legislature also advanced radical anti-trans sports bans, including for college athletics, which runs afoul of NCAA standards.
Yeah, they're going to run into some trouble there. And Keturah won this special election now in February, but she's going to have to then run for the seat for the full term this fall. So she's got a good head start on that, but this is a major win.
So our mayor in New York, Eric Adams, continues to outrage us. I mean, really outrage us. We objected to some of his anti-gay appointments, and then he goes ahead and appoints. Here's a picture of him with this guy, Eric Salgado. This guy ran for mayor in 2013 on a campaign against gay rights and against abortion. And, you know, really just a terrible guy. And he appoints him to the number two in the Office of Immigrant Affairs, where the staff is appalled. But he has him say, well, I've evolved on the issue, and I welcome everybody now. Now, when the reporters want to talk to this guy, Salgado, oh, how did that come about? Where's the evidence of that? I mean, that you now like gay people and approve of us. He won't talk to them. So that's one. And then he goes ahead. He's got now a trio of these anti-gay pastors, Salgado, Guilford Monroe's at the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives. And then he's going ahead and appointing Fernando Cabrera there on the right, who is just known as an anti-gay activist and hardly anything else. So Cabrera posts an apology on Facebook for his past anti-gay actions. And then Mayor Adams says, well, I accept his apology. Well, it's not up to you to accept his apology. He's got to apologize to us. So the community is having a rally against all this on Thursday at 12:30 at City Hall.
We're taping this on Wednesday. So if you're seeing this now, it's tomorrow. If you're seeing it after 12:30 on Thursday, it's already happened. I'm sure there will be more.
And finally, our allies are also speaking out. Brad Lander and Jumaane Williams, two other citywide officials, criticizing what's going on. You know, there's a reluctance to criticize the mayor. He's new and everything, but he's so arrogant. I mean, a woman confronted him about this and it was on tape. And he said, come talk to me when you can talk like a human being.
All she did was come up to him on the street. He was out on the street meeting and greeting. And she comes up to him and asks about this. And he refuses and rejects her and says, you know, you're being rude.
And speaking of hiring bigots, golf pro Phil Mickelson is now working with the Saudis to start an alternative pro golf tour. Despite acknowledging their scary, I can't say the word.
MFers. MFers.
What?
MFers.
Yes. And they execute, he says, and I know they execute gay people. But he's doing it for the money. Now, most of his fellow pros are not going along with this, especially the young ones. Tiger Woods wants nothing to do it. But Trump is offering his U.S. courses as venues for the rogue tour.
Well, that's because the PGA has taken all their tournaments off of Trump courses several years ago when he started going after immigrants. And they moved their major tournament with him to Mexico just to really rub it in.
But the PGA Tour is not angels. They play in China all the time. Come on.
Yes, absolutely. But Phil has just completely destroyed his career at this point.
All right.
Staten
Island is keeping up an old tradition of keeping LGBT groups out of St. Patrick's Day parades. It's the last one. The encouraging thing out there is most public officials are staying, including Republicans, most of them are staying out of that parade. The Bronx Parade finally got inclusive this year. And St. Pat's for All in Queens is March 5th, and we're still welcome on March 17th for the big one on March 17th.
And the Pride Parade is returning to the streets in California in both San Francisco and L.A., and returning somewhat to their roots, doing more stripped-down parades. We'll keep an eye on that.
All right. Let's go to San Francisco.
Yes. Where gay cop Brendan Mannix has just received a $225,000 settlement from the city after being harassed and discriminated against by his San Francisco Police Department colleagues for being gay.
Yeah, they used to say things to him like, you're such a queen, too dramatic, ugh, you gays. But, you know, no word on whether the perps in this case have been disciplined at all.
Well, that's a continuing story. We'll get to more of that. But let us also catch up with the trans murders, and a couple more in recent days. Who do we have first? Cypress Ramos, 21 years old, Latina, in Lubbock, Texas. She was beaten And her body was found in a storage unit.
A burning building in a storage unit. There has been a suspect arrested, Alan Montemayor, 32 years old.
And also shot dead by her boyfriend in Detroit, trans woman Naomi Skinner, 25 years old. The ages on these people are just heartbreaking.
Originally from Kentucky, the boyfriend was 26. He was arrested, charged with second degree murder. And now we're going to...
We've uncovered some more murders of trans women in 2021. So we have a list here of four who are newly identified as having been murdered in 2021. First, we have a picture of two together, I think. Ruby Dominguez and Kiva Scatter. Ruby on the left, 29 years old, died in a hit-and-run accident, but there's no information yet on whether how deliberate that was. But
Kiva was
Arlington, Texas in July last year.
And Kiva was 34, black trans woman, fatally shot in Baton Rouge on October 15th. They were the 54th and 55th murders of trans and non-binary people in 2021. And then we learned of another one from last year. Martina Caldera shot dead December 6th in Houston, making her the 56th. Police had believed she was hit by a car and then figured out that she was shot to death. I don't know how that happened.
Possibly by a partner.
All right. Awful.
All right. And now we stay in Texas for a scandal at a Christian school. They have arrested five members of the staff of this Christian school. Look at them. Aren't they a lovely lineup? For covering up a sexual assault of a student. There was videotape of this assault. And yet these staff members managed to ignore it and cover it up.
They're
being prosecuted. They've been arrested.
It's a felony because of the cover-up. One student in the assault has been arrested. This was a kid who was set upon in a locker room by other boys.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I want to give you a good news story. We told you about this 3 years ago, a gay couple in Pennsylvania adopted six siblings in order to keep them together. Taken out of an abusive home, Steve and Rob Anderson McLean, who have themselves been together for 20 years, raised two previous sons who are now adults. But they said after the first week with these kids, they were asking if they could stay forever. And they took them in 2018, adopted them in 2019, and they're all still together and thriving.
Congratulations to the whole family. And I see that we need to move along because our time is short and I need to answer this phone call.
Well, we want to talk about another actually ultimately positive story in Atlanta. A black trans woman, Juzima Goldring, 29 years old. She was awarded $1.5 million after police falsely arrested her in 2015 for jaywalking and then claimed she was hiding cocaine inside her stress ball, which was a lie. They jailed her for 5 months. A federal judge, William Ray, made the ruling in Fulton County. I hope he gets Trump later. The cops are still on the job, though. She was placed in a trans unit when she was arrested, but still was sexually abused in there.
Gets $1.5 million. The judge said, she deserves some compensation for this, but he certainly didn't think it was enough. And also in Georgia, Ashley Diamond, the trans woman who's been in prison off and on for years, is still trying to get herself moved out of a men's prison, where she is regularly sexually assaulted, and the prison officials will not move her. And they're just out to punish her on a daily basis, and it's a terrible story. So she's continuing to sue. I think it's the ACLU that is helping her. Maybe it's Lambda Legal, but terrible, terrible story. Poor.
So, update on Leah Thomas. She was allowed to race as a swimmer in the, and she won the individual Ivy Championship, the first trans athlete to do so, the 500-meter freestyle, setting a pool record at Harvard. But meanwhile, in Utah, Republicans are pushing a bill to establish a panel to analyze the bodies of individual trans youth and decide whether they can participate in sports. It would include doctors and trainers and mental health pros, all appointed by the Republican legislature.
Leah won three individual races at the Ivy League championships. Her relay team lost, so I guess she's not Superwoman. And there was another trans competitor, Isaac Hennig from Yale, a trans man who has is not taking testosterone because he wants to keep competing as a woman. And he, what did he do? He had a first place finish and a third place finish. And he is legally competing as a woman because he has not started taking testosterone yet.
I want to talk about a couple of people that we lost. Joe Tom Easley, who I knew fairly well. He was a former board chair at Lambda Legal Defense, 1983 to 87, early days, and a leader in the fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell when he was with the Service Members Legal Defense Network. We have a picture of the whole group when in 2010 they finally got that repealed. He died at the age of 81, survived by his husband of 39 years, Peter Freiberg. There's Peter in the middle there, with Gloria Estefan at a Miami Pride event. When they married in Toronto in 2003, they got the first gay wedding announcement in the New York Times. We'll include a link to a story about him because it's a fascinating history of activism in many respects.
Yes, anti-Vietnam War. He was in the Navy and he got turned in as gay by a friend, but he was so popular with his commander that the commander made sure he got an honorable discharge.
And then he could use the GI Bill to go to law school. And
yes, and he went on to work for Ralph Nader as one of Nader's Raiders.
Right.
We also lost Bruce Nickerson, age 80, of congestive heart failure, leaving his partner, Carlos Scott Lopez. Bruce devoted his life to helping gay men who had been the victims of police sex stings, men who'd been entrapped and prosecuted. He did a fantastic job of winning case after case in California.
And set many excellent precedents. I read that his father was a Golden Gloves boxer who used to beat him up, and his mother was a fundamentalist minister who used to beat the devil out of him. And this abuse gave him the sympathy for downtrodden people and informed his lifetime work.
You may also remember the case of Alan Schindler, the Navy guy who was murdered by several of his shipmates in Japan when they were docked there. And one main murderer, Terry Helvey, has been in prison for 30 years. He has just been granted parole release. And that's very controversial. Schindler's family and Michael Petrelis, a longtime activist who brought the case to public attention and got this guy convicted, are against his release. So that's, that remains controversial.
A brief lesbian history lesson that we don't have a lot of time.
Wait, can we do AOC and Queens first? Do we want to?
Go ahead.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez may have stepped in it in her Queens district. She suggested naming a public library after Lorena.
No, post office. Post office.
Post office. Thank you. After Lorena Borjas, a local legend trans activist. But it's already named after Jean and Jules Manford, who were the founders of PFLAG on behalf of their gay sons. And people are saying, wait a minute, couldn't we find something else for Lorena?
Open up a trans residence. All right. Some lesbian history. I didn't know this. You know, they banned, you know, buggery, gross indecency, but they only did it for men.
In the UK.
In the United Kingdom. And that was in 1880, I think, 85 or something like that. But in 1921, after World War I, all these uppity women who were getting the right to vote, and they'd just gotten it, all this kind of stuff, there was a concern about lesbians. So they were going to have criminalized acts of indecency by females. But it got struck down in the House of Lords, they said, because, oh my God, if we bring these cases, more people are going to know about lesbianism, and there are going to be more lesbians.
If only it were so.
So they didn't pass the bill.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And then also, it's the 35th anniversary of the first action by the Lavender Hill Mob. Our associate producer, Bill Bauman, they went down to the CDC, Marty Robinson, others to protest. And within a few weeks, ACT UP was founded. So, yeah.
Yeah, they were against mandatory HIV testing. They were afraid people would be rounded up, and they wanted the CDC to concentrate on finding treatments and a cure and a vaccine and sex education.
35 years. All right.
Seems like yesterday. In Hungary, a court has ruled that the Lesbian Association was not defamed by a newspaper calling them pedophiles. The Government Media Council has fined a TV station for running pro-LGBT PSAs. And all of this is in anticipation of the April 3rd presidential election and anti-gay referendum.
Europe's top court has ruled that the European Union can withhold funds from countries that run afoul of the rule of law and abusing gay people and things. And we're looking at you, Poland and Hungary. Yes. They could lose billions in funding.
Kuwait's constitutional court overturned a law against imitation of the opposite sex, meaning trans people who are prosecuted. But a local activist says, don't get too excited about this. They're really still terrible, and this is just window dressing.
Still got 7 years in prison for gay sex. Colombia just decriminalized abortion. Colombia decriminalized abortion. The United States is recriminalizing abortion.
The Justice Ministry in Russia, on its way to Ukraine, is suing to dissolve the Spear Charitable Foundation, which is the sponsor of the Russian LGBT network, calling it contrary to state policy. They just want to wipe us out. Good luck with that. And Manchester Pride in the UK is going to emphasize political issues and not music festivals, refocusing on activist roots.
Right. All right. Deeply mourned by the AIDS community and many others is Dr. Paul Farmer, a pioneer of global health. This guy went door to door in Haiti to deliver antiviral medications. He died at the age of 62. I think he had a
62. He died in his sleep in Rwanda.
Right.
Unbelievable hero. He really, all he was interested in was community health and grassroots work. He worked in countries all over the world, particularly Haiti and Rwanda, and Russia and Peru and everywhere else.
And he raised millions for these local facilities and hired local doctors and nurses to make it all happen.
And no one believed that it was possible to deliver high quality health care in impoverished areas. And he proved you could. He was an incredible saint during the AIDS epidemic. And the fact that he's dead, first of all, I can't believe he was only 62, because he was working on this stuff right out of college. And he started this Partners in Health, which is the now worldwide organization that's doing it. And he was written about by Tracy Kidder in this book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, The Quest of Dr. Paul Farmer, A Man Who Would Cure the World. Just a really unbelievable.
A close friend said that he had a tender heart. Seeing pain and suffering was very hard for him. He wasn't detached from anyone. That's the beauty of it. But it was a heart attack that took him. I want to pay tribute to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, our friends over there. They raised $2.5 million, distributed to food and meal delivery programs nationwide, despite the absence of full in-theater fundraising for more than 2 years. So they gave it to 127 programs. That's Tom Viola there, the longtime director, who said nutrition and access to healthy meals are the crux of wellness and necessary for medications to be effective. So, you know, what a wonderful group.
Moving on to entertainment. I cannot believe that you and Dawn did not talk about Wanda Sykes as one of the hosts of the Oscars coming up.
Okay.
Wanda Sykes out lesbian, Amy Schumer, Regina Hall, all on March 27th. But I'm looking forward this weekend to the return of Killing Eve for its last homoerotic season with Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer. And then my brilliant friend on Monday, the Elena Ferrante series, season 3, and the last season of Better Things with Pamela Adlon.
And I watched that Fannie Lou Hamer documentary that you recommended, and it was absolutely terrific.
Inspiring. Amazing.
On PBS. If you got PBS, whatever passport, you can watch it still. Okay. The Winter Olympics. There were 14 out LGBTQ athletes that won 9 medals. We got we talked about others last week, but this week, Canadian women's hockey team, they beat the U.S. 3-2 in the final. They have about 6 or 7 or 8.
You have 2 minutes.
Okay. Quickly, Alex Carpenter, silver medal in women's ice hockey. Ronja Savolainen and Team Finland took home the bronze medal in women's ice hockey. Sandra Nuslund took home the gold in women's ski cross-country event. Brittany Bowe of Team USA, the bronze medal in women's speed skating. And Bruce Muat, the first out gay British athlete to win a Winter Olympics medal in curling.
Finally, a man. and Gus Kenworthy ended his Olympic career saying the IOC is not pushing marginalized people enough. GLAAD says the number of LGBTQ characters on TV is soaring, now 12% of series regulars. RuPaul is going to produce and host the new version of Lingo, which is where Wordle came from. It's going to be on CBS later this year. Philadelphia Flyers held a pride night and honored Mark Siegel, publisher of Philadelphia Gay News, who you see there in the front with Gritty, the Flyers mascot in the back. That's my favorite picture of the week.
Looks like he's having a great time. And, you know, Netflix also has the first Arabic language film on the thing, and it's got a gay character, which has caused quite a stir in the Arab world, but it's also the most popular film in the Arab world.
They also have a film called Grandma's a Lesbian, which I haven't watched yet, but will. And Days of Our Lives has a returning gay couple, Will and Sonny, and Stars on Demand has Maurice Hines Bring Them Back documentary, which I watched and is pretty good.
I watched that as well, that gay couple on Days of Our Lives. They're troubled.
10 seconds.
Bye. Nice to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Next week, David Pevsner, Damn Shame is his book.
Yes, our friend.
Bye.